You're listening to an episode of a Wondery Plus exclusive series. To continue listening, join Wondery Plus and enjoy ad-free listening to over 40,000 episodes, early access to your favorite podcasts, and more. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app to listen to American innovations early and ad-free. It's Friday, July 16th, 2010, a little after 9 a.m. in Culver City, California. Liam Omurku strides into his office at Symantec, one of the leading cybersecurity firms in the world. Although it has a fancy name, the Threat Analysis Lab, it's a drab office populated by cubicles. There's no art on the walls and only one set of windows. Omurku is 32 years old, with a round face and short brown hair that sticks up at the front. His Irish brogue booms as he greets his colleagues.
Cheers, Deb. TGIF, am I right, Nate? Hey, Jake, tell me you saw the game last night.
At his cubicle, he slings his messenger bag onto the floor and plops into his chair. He logs into each of his three computers. Two are research computers, isolated from the company network and kept offline, so they can't spread any of the viruses he studies. The third is connected to the internet. Omurku checks his email to see what's come in from the Dublin office, which has just wrapped up its workday. Symantec focuses on detecting and disabling malware, software designed with malicious intent. Malware can pop up at any time, so the company has people on call around the world 24 hours a day, ready to respond as new threats arise. Symantec catches approximately 1 million malware files per month. Most of those are known viruses, and Symantec's software automatically defends against them. But if there's a suspicious file that Symantec's algorithm doesn't recognize, it gets flagged for manual review. That's where Omurku and his counterparts come in. Omurku skims an email from the Dublin office. The algorithm flagged a virus his colleagues have named Stuxnet, based on a string of letters they found in the code.
Oh, good. This will be perfect for John.
Omurku is training a junior engineer, and he wants a piece of malware that he can hand off to his younger colleague as a teaching exercise. Omurku stands up from his desk and looks out over the wall of his cubicle.
Oi, John, I got something for you to analyze.
Yeah, sure.
Omurku sits back down and clicks open the file. But what he sees surprises him.
That's weird.
The file is over 500 kilobytes, more than 10 times larger than the biggest virus he's seen before. He mutters to himself,
"What is making you so big?"
Omurku decides to poke around in the file. At this point in his career, he's seen enough viruses that he can usually glance at the code and know exactly what it's doing. But as Omurku examines this code, he can't make heads or tails of it. Omurku stands up.
"Hey, John, never mind. I'm going to handle this one myself.
No problem."
Omurku returns to his seat and cracks his knuckles.
"What do you do, Stuxnet?"
For the rest of the day, Omurku pores over the code, looking for clues. But by the time night falls, he still has no idea what the virus does or who unleashed it. Solving the mystery of Stuxnet will become an obsession for Omurku and other top cybersecurity experts around the world. And the answers will reveal startling new information about how the internet can be turned into a weapon.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes.
And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Wondery, I'm Stephen Johnson, and this is American Innovations. When a burglar wants to break into a house, they might take advantage of a loose window or an unlocked door. Hackers aren't much different. When they want to break into a computer, they look for vulnerabilities in internet browsers, or email clients, or other software programs. The job of companies like Symantec is to build software that shores up those vulnerabilities, so it's tough for bad actors to get inside. Generally, those fixes are easy because most hackers are lazy. They take advantage of the same software weaknesses over and over again, counting on the fact that many users don't bother to update their computers to patch the known security holes. In the roughly 12 million malware files captured by Symantec and other security firms every year, only about a dozen take advantage of a vulnerability that no one is aware of. These weaknesses are known as zero days, a reference to how such vulnerabilities are often found in brand new software that has been zero days on the market. Building a zero-day attack takes time and skill on the part of the hacker, and security experts are thrilled when they find one. The discovery launches an exciting race to build the code to stop it. In 2010, Symantec's algorithm flagged Stuxnet as potential zero-day malware. It was a virus the likes of which no one had seen before. While much of the code was highly sophisticated, some of it appeared to be written by an amateur. Even stranger, Stuxnet's entire purpose was a mystery. While it had infected thousands of computers by the time Symantec found it, it seemed to leave them unharmed. It stole no information, erased no data. It simply moved on and continued its search for the next machine to infect. The easiest approach for Symantec would have been to just patch the holes in the software that the virus exploited and move on. But for Liam Omerku, the mystery of Stuxnet was too compelling to ignore. He had to know what this virus actually did, who had launched it, and what its target was. The answers to those questions would have global ramifications and put Omerku and his colleagues at the center of one of the biggest national security secrets in history. This is our two-part series, The Mystery of Stuxnet, about how a small group of cybersecurity experts and journalists traced the origins of one of the most revolutionary computer viruses in history. This is episode 1, Cracking the Code. It's Sunday, July 18, 2010. On a beach not far from the Symantec offices, Liam Omerku sits reading a book. Or rather, holding a book. He hasn't read much of it. He's too distracted. Next to him, his girlfriend flips through a magazine, then glances over at him. You literally haven't turned a page in 30 minutes. I timed you. Are you still thinking about that virus? Omerku closes his book and turns to her, excited. It was just so weird. It was like a Russian doll of code. They took one block of code, nested it inside another block of code. And then they took all that and put it inside another block of code. You know how much work that is? And you know what I always say about hackers? Yeah, they're lazy. Yes, they do just enough work to get what they need from the computer they're targeting while avoiding getting caught. I've seen some complex viruses, like spyware out of China, and it wasn't even close to the sophistication I saw in Stuxnet. And I only analyzed 5 kilobytes of it. I'm sorry. I know I've had a one-track mind this weekend. It's okay. It's nice to see you so excited about work. It's been a while. When Omerku entered college in the mid-1990s, his university started having problems with hackers. Time and again, they would lock the entire campus out of their online accounts as a prank. Omerku joined a team of students trying to stop them. He loved the hunt, and he knew then that cybersecurity was the career he wanted to pursue. But there's less of that cat-and-mouse dynamic in his job than he'd expected. It's rare that hackers do anything truly inventive, like Stuxnet. Omerku smiles.
I'm pretty excited to go back tomorrow and see what the Tokyo office discovered in their analysis.
But then, that'll probably be the end of it.
You really think the Tokyo team will have Stuxnet figured out?
No, not even close. But it'll take time and money and manpower to really crack Stuxnet. And I don't think Symantec will want to devote the resources.
Why?
Because our job is to stop a virus from getting onto a machine, or to get rid of it if it does. We know enough to do both those things already. There's no real reason to keep poking at Stuxnet. I just want to.
No, you need to.
I do? If you don't, it's going to eat at you. I know you. For your own peace of mind and my sanity living with you, you at least need to ask. Omerku chuckles and nods. His girlfriend, as usual, is right. It's July 19, 2010, at the Symantec offices in Culver City. When Eric Chen arrives at his cubicle Monday morning, he finds Liam Omerku sitting in his chair. Chen is the technical director of Symantec's security response team. He brought Omerku onto his team 6 years ago and still oversees him. Chen adjusts his small glasses and crosses his arms.
Good morning, Liam. Was your weekend so good that you forgot which cubicle is yours?
Ah, very funny. Pick on the Irishman for his drinking.
No, I need to talk to you.
Omerku stands up, allowing Chen to fold his lanky frame into his chair.
What's up?
I don't know if you've seen this Stuxnet virus yet. It came in on Friday. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, me too. I checked it out over the weekend. I know we don't have to analyze it further to do our job, but I think we should. I mean, hear me out. Our customers are going to want to know what exactly Stuxnet did. And right now, we don't have any answers. From a customer service point of view, I think we need to learn more.
Chen smirks.
From a customer service perspective, huh? That's why you think we should do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this has nothing to do with the fact that it would be fun to entangle one of the weirdest, most enigmatic viruses I've ever seen.
No, nothing at all. Chen grins, showcasing his deep dimples. He's only 3 years older than Omerku, and he was also drawn to cybersecurity after learning about it in college. As he climbed the management ranks, he discovered that the best analysts were not necessarily the best educated, but rather the most curious. The coding skills were teachable, but that unquenchable desire to know how something worked was not. That's why Chen likes Omerku. He's one of the most curious people on Chen's team. Chen leans forward in his chair.
Well, I agree with you that we should keep analyzing it. I mean, this thing is a doozy. It's way too complex to be spyware and way too sophisticated to have been written by your average criminal. If this is a new type of threat, we need to know how it works and what it is so we're prepared for the next one.
Haha, I see you're motivated by customer service too.
100%. Now, I can't afford to put too many people on this project, but do you know Nicolas Fallier from the Paris office?
Oh yeah, that kid's a genius. I'll have him work on it with us. Now, I noticed that whenever Stuxnet infects a machine, it sends a message back to a couple of servers. The message is encrypted, but it didn't look too advanced. If we can see what message the virus is sending, we might learn more about what its goal is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, great. While Nico gets up to speed, we can work on the messages.
This is going to be fun.
Omerku heads back to his cubicle, fired up to dig into Stuxnet. That night, Omerku sits at home, eating dinner with his girlfriend. But his mind is a million miles away, still thinking about Stuxnet. His girlfriend watches him with a bemused smile.
So I guess Eric allowed you to keep studying your weird new virus.
Yes, he's all in. We actually made huge progress today. Every time Stuxnet infects a computer, it sends messages to a couple of servers that were obviously set up by whoever created the virus. The messages are encrypted, but Eric broke it in 2 seconds flat. he learned that it sends back information about which version of this software from Siemens it's using. Software that's made for PLCs. PLCs? Programmable logic controllers. It's a type of computer that's used in industrial plants to control machinery, like robotic arms and conveyor belts on assembly lines, that kind of thing. Why would anyone want to hack into those? Omurku takes a sip of his beer.
Well, we don't know for sure, because this is the first time either of us have seen a PLC targeted.
But we're thinking it's likely corporate espionage.
Seriously? Well, if you broke into a PLC, depending on what it was controlling, you could maybe get the formula for some pharmaceutical or industrial plans for a car or anything else that the company might be building.
Huh.
Seems like they could just figure out the drug formula themselves in the same time and money it took to write this crazy code. But okay. What'd you do while Eric was doing all that?
I was looking into the domains the virus sends the messages to. They were supposed to look like European football fan sites, but a little digging showed they were registered with fraudulent names and credit cards. So I called up the DNS service provider.
Oh my God, enough with the acronyms. Please, use whole words.
Sorry. Domain Name System Service Provider. They're the service that makes sure that when you click on a link, you get directed to the correct website. I explained how these sites were involved with propagating a virus and asked them to redirect the messages coming into those two domains to our server. Should be all set by tomorrow morning. So we'll be getting real-time data about where Stuxnet is spreading. We should learn a ton. And they do. The next morning, when Omurku arrives at work, he sees that the messages Stuxnet reports back to its domains have been redirected to Symantec's server. By the end of the week, they have enough data to start analyzing the patterns. It's Friday, July 23rd, 2010. Omurku and Chen hunch over Omurku's computer, waiting for his program to analyze the messages that have come in from the computers Stuxnet has infected.
It's done. Let's take a look.
Huh. That's not what I expected. Of the 38,000 infected machines we received messages from this week, 22,000 of them are in Iran. Have you ever seen a virus that was predominantly spreading in Iran?
No. Never.
What other countries are showing up? Indonesia and India, but there's a huge drop. But a little over 6,000 machines in Indonesia and 3,000 in India. I wonder if there's a connection between those countries. Chen pulls out his phone and runs a quick search on Google, curious to see what comes up.
Iran and India were building a natural gas pipeline between their countries. Looks like it's been really controversial. Last year, India dropped out due to pressure from the United States, but then they rejoined in May. That was 2 months ago. 2 months before we started seeing Stuxnet. Does that seem coincidental to you?
I don't know. Maybe? But Chen is barely paying attention. He's typing furiously on his phone.
Daha! I thought I remembered this. That Siemens software Stuxnet looks for, it's not just used in factories. It's also used in critical infrastructure projects.
Like gas pipelines.
Yeah. I think whoever wrote this virus is stealing information about politically important infrastructure projects. Maybe they want the schematics to find weak points.
Chen begins to pace.
Look, we know that whoever wrote this employed elite coders and paid them for months of work. And now it seems like the goal is geopolitical, not corporate.
You know who I think developed this?
Please don't say what I think you're about to say.
A nation state.
Oh. Omurku groans. And given how sophisticated it is, the list of countries who could pull this off is short. I mean, off the top of my head, the U.S., Israel, China, Russia, that's it. This is actual espionage.
Omurku nervously licks his lips. Untangling Stuxnet has turned out to be much more intense than he expected it to be.
You realize we just took all the messages that were supposed to be sent to, I don't know, some secret agents and rerouted them here. To us, at our office.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are that those agents might figure that out and be able to find us?
Probably pretty good.
So cool, we may have just set off an international incident. This is awesome.
Is it even legal for a nation state to sic a virus on another country's infrastructure?
I don't know. This is starting to feel a little dangerous.
Chen plays with a fidget spinner, twirling it in his hand.
We could stop. Walk away.
Yeah. But the idea doesn't sit right with either of them. Chen puts down the spinner and turns to Omurku. But the thing is, what's done is done. We already intercepted the messages. There's no undoing that now. And it's not really our job to protect classified government missions. Their virus got onto computers that belong to our customers. And it is our job to protect those computers. So we keep going. Yep. They're silent for a moment, processing this information. Then Chen clears his throat. Just FYI, I am not suicidal. If I die over the weekend, no matter what the crime scene looks like, it was the work of a hitman. Oh, dear God, don't even joke about that kind of thing. Who says I'm joking? Omurku scrambles to turn off his computer, ready to take a breather from the international intrigue. It's been a week of unexpected surprises, and the untangling of Stuxnet has only just begun.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
It's 5:58 p.m. in late July 2010, the Symantec office in Paris, France. Nicolas Fellier stares at his watch, waiting for it to be late enough to call Eric Chen and Liam Omurku in Los Angeles. Two more minutes. He really hopes they get to work on time. For the last several weeks, Fellier has been focusing full-time on figuring out Stuxnet's payload, the code it's designed to execute once it infects a computer. It's been a long and arduous task, but Fellier finally has a breakthrough, and he's eager to share it. At long last, the clock strikes 6 p.m. in Paris, 9 a.m. in Los Angeles. Fellier grabs the phone and dials.
Eric Chen speaking.
It's Nico.
You found something?
Yes.
Hang on. Liam's just walking in now. I'm going to put you on speaker. Okay, we're set. Go ahead, Nico.
So this afternoon, I was going through the payload, separating out each file. I was just trying to get a grip on how it's organized, and I saw a file name that looked really familiar. Then I figured out why. It has the same name as one of the files in the Siemens software.
What does the file do?
Well, in the Siemens software, it's a file that gets used in a bunch of different functions. The file that's in Stuxnet is nearly identical to the Siemens file, but it does add some extra commands. Back in Los Angeles, it's a light bulb moment for Chen and Omurku.
It's intercepting it's hijacking the command with its own.
Guys, sorry, I can't understand you. Can you please talk one at a time?
Sorry, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Why don't you tell us what you actually saw instead of us guessing?
Well, I think you figured it out, but yeah, Stuxnet's intercepting commands between the Siemens software and the PLC and replacing them with its own orders.
But what is it telling the PLC to do?
I don't know yet. If I had to wager a guess, I'd say it's spying.
Okay, drop everything else and focus on confirming that.
Yeah, I will. It might take a while, though. There's a ton of code here, and these PLCs aren't targeted very often.
I don't think they've ever been. Me neither.
Right, so I'm going to be kind of flying blind as I figure out which code doesn't belong.
All right, well, good luck. Call as soon as you get anything.
Back in Los Angeles, Omurku hangs up the phone and turns to Chen. We're getting a little closer. Yep, we know what files it's targeting. That's something. Fellier has delivered a key clue in solving the mystery of Stuxnet. And soon, Chen and Omurku will have a breakthrough of their own. It's Friday evening, in August 2010. Liam Omerku was celebrating his birthday on a rooftop bar overlooking the ocean. A friend hands him a shot.
Hey, cheers. Happy 33rd.
Omerku throws back the drink. He's having a great time. His sister and brother-in-law are in town from Ireland, and his girlfriend and several close friends have joined in the festivities. The only thing nagging him is that Eric Chen is a no-show. And it's not like him to be late. Could he have made another discovery about Stuxnet? Omerku has to restrain himself from sneaking away to the office to find out. Finally, 3 hours after the party began, Chen arrives.
Hey, happy birthday. Sorry I'm late.
Omerku takes one look at him and shakes his head.
No, spit it out. You found something.
Chen looks around.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, and then we're not going to talk about it again for the rest of the night. You're not going to ignore your friends, family, and girlfriend to talk about Stuxnet.
Chen pulls out his phone.
So I got this email today from a researcher at another security firm. They saw our most recent blog post about Stuxnet. They've seen some clues that suggest the virus exploits more than one zero-day. I went back through the code, and I think they're right.
Omerku's jaw drops. A zero-day is a previously unidentified security flaw in a piece of software. For a virus to exploit just one zero-day is rare. For it to exploit many is unheard of.
I mean, has that ever been done before?
I've never seen it. Omerku takes the phone from Chen and reads the email. He sets his half-finished drink down.
I'm not taking another sip. Tomorrow morning, bright and early, we go back into the office and we find it.
Chen nods.
I'm down.
Omerku grabs a canapé off a tray.
You know what's weird? We agreed we weren't going to talk about this anymore. Just one more thing. If we're right and a nation-state did create Stuxnet, doesn't it seem wrong for them to use a zero-day, let alone several? It means that a government knew about a software vulnerability and didn't warn their citizens that their computers were at risk.
Chen shrugs.
I don't think we can know until we know who the target was and what exactly the virus does to those computers. Maybe the ends justify the means. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, no more of this. Go be merry with your friends. You only turn 33 once.
The next day, Omerku and Chen return to the office. They confirm that Stuxnet doesn't have a single zero-day exploit. It has four of them. It's unprecedented. Whoever built the code was determined to get this virus into the computers it targeted. Even if one of the software vulnerabilities was patched before Stuxnet reached a computer, the virus had three more vulnerabilities to exploit to break in and deliver its payload. But the question still remains, what does the payload actually do? Not much later, Falliere discovers the answer. And it's bigger than he, Chen, or Omerku imagine. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Paris, France. August 2010. Nicolas Falliere paces around his office, compulsively twisting his Rubik's Cube. He just discovered something big. Really big. But it's only 6 in the morning in Los Angeles. He feels like he's going to explode. One of Falliere's colleagues knocks on the door. Falliere looks through the window, confused. He's the only security analyst in Symantec's Paris office. The rest of the European analysts are based in Dublin. Falliere started his career there, but after a couple of years, asked to transfer to Paris to be closer to his family and girlfriend. He likes it, but he feels isolated from his office mates. It's unusual to find one of them knocking on his door.
Hey, what's going on? That's what I was going to ask you. I saw you pacing in here. You look like you're having a nervous breakdown. You okay? Ah, no. I'm excited. I just made a big breakthrough on this Stuxnet virus I've been researching, but my teammates aren't awake yet, so I'm jumping out of my skin waiting to tell them. You want to tell me? I have a few minutes.
Falliere grins. He really, really wants to tell someone.
Ah, sure. Come on in.
Falliere ushers him inside and clears a stack of papers off a chair.
Okay, so usually when people build viruses, they do it to steal data from the computer. They want, you know, credit card numbers, passwords, trade secrets. That's what we assumed Stuxnet was doing. We didn't know what it was stealing, but we assumed that was the end game. I'm sensing you've discovered that it's not doing that.
Falliere shakes his head.
It's worse than stealing. Stuxnet is there to change how the computer operates. And here's the kicker.
The type of computers this virus looks for, they're used to control heavy machinery in factories. Wait, so this virus is trying to physically change something in the real world, like how an assembly line operates?
Falliere nods.
This virus isn't about espionage. It's sabotage.
Well, that's crazy and definitely scary. But if you ran a factory and the conveyor belt on your assembly line moved at some weird speed, you'd notice it pretty fast, wouldn't you? Couldn't the factory work backwards and figure out what's causing it?
Falliere leaps up. That's the other thing I've figured out. Stuxnet doesn't start its sabotage right away. It waits and records all the normal commands the computer makes for 2 weeks. And then when the virus starts sending its own malicious commands, it reports that everything is business as usual, using the commands it recorded to hide what it's actually doing. To the factory, it will look like the software is running properly, even though it's not. His coworker raises his eyebrows, surprised.
So it's like that movie Ocean's 11 when they hijack the security cameras and play a fake recording that makes it look like everything's normal in the casino vault, when in fact they're stealing the money from it.
Yes, exactly. So let's say this virus makes the conveyor belt in an assembly line run too fast, causing it to break. There's no indication from the computer that anything is wrong. No alarms are set off, no alerts pop up. And when programmers try to look at the code itself, the virus intercepts their commands and sends up clean versions of code for them to see. Even if engineers try to reprogram the code, Stuxnet has ways of intervening. It's truly diabolical. So what was the target? What manufacturing process were they trying to sabotage?
Falliere sits back down.
I have no idea. That seems key. I think you should figure that out.
Falliere laughs. If only it were that easy.
But now that they have a better handle on what Stuxnet is doing, the Symantec team will turn their focus to who it's targeting. And a new expert will join the hunt, helping them to further unravel the mystery of this strange and powerful new virus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's August 2010, Hamburg, Germany. Ralph Langner sits in his small but tidy office on the phone with a representative from the software company Siemens. He taps his foot in annoyance. He's 52 years old with short dark hair and dresses in a full suit every day. Langner runs a small cyber consulting firm that specializes in industrial computers. Viruses aren't usually a big issue with his clients, but Langner has just read a blog post from Symantec about malicious code that targets programmable logic controllers running Siemens software. According to the blog, the code has the potential to wreak havoc on the heavy equipment controlled by that software. Langner has a lot of customers who use that combination of hardware and software, so he called Siemens to find out more information. But the representative is brushing him off.
There is a virus out there that is attacking your software, and you're telling me you haven't analyzed it? You have no idea what this virus does?
Now, we've put out a number of statements on it.
You put out a couple of blog posts in July saying that not many customers seem to be affected by it. That is not adequate. You haven't said what it's capable of. Your customers, my customers, deserve more information about what this code could do to their machines and what other security vulnerabilities may exist.
Thank you for your feedback, sir. I will pass it along. But for the moment, all I can do is direct you to the public statements we have put out.
Well, thanks for nothing. This has been singularly unhelpful.
He slams down the phone and walks to the window. He takes a deep breath while staring out onto the tree-lined street, trying to calm himself down. But it does little to help. To Langner, this is an emergency situation. For years, he's been warning that industrial computers were ripe for attack. No one listened. Now it is actually happening. And the same vulnerability in the Siemens software could exist in other software. Pieces of the Stuxnet code are already online. Other hackers could learn from it and attack other PLCs. Who knows what damage they could do? This should be an all-hands-on-deck situation. Instead, only Symantec seems to care. And they've gone quiet too. Langner suspects it's because they've hit a wall. Most computer experts aren't familiar with PLCs and this Siemens software. But Langner is. If no one else is going to figure out what Stuxnet does and who it's targeting, then maybe he should. Over the next several weeks, Langner and his team try to deconstruct the Stuxnet code. It's slow going, but finally they make a surprising discovery. It's September 2010. Ralph Langner opens the door to his office and steps into the room his two employees share. His suit is rumpled, and his usually clean-shaven face sports a dark 5 o'clock shadow. He and his small team have been working around the clock. "I need you to come look at something." His two employees stand up, rub their eyes, and follow him into his office. They gather around his desk as Langner points to a block of code on his screen. "Look at this. Does this make sense to you?" The two men lean forward. One squints his eyes, then leans back.
"Wait, is it saying to only execute the payload if it finds 6 groups of 164 PLCs with the Siemens software? That's my interpretation. That's very specific."
Langner's team knows from their work that every industrial plant, even those owned by the same company, configure their PLCs slightly differently based on the setup of their machinery. Langner nods as he taps on the screen.
"This virus is looking for the one location that would have that configuration. But that's crazy. Who would spend all this money to write a virus to target one plant? I don't think this is a virus in the traditional sense. It's a precision weapon. Whatever its target is must be really valuable."
Langner turns to his employees.
"We need to figure out what it is."
Over the next several days, Langner calls every industry leader he knows, looking for the precise configuration of PLCs that the virus is designed to target. But no one he talks to has a match. Hitting a dead end, Langner publishes a blog post revealing what he's learned. Back in California, the Symantec team reads his post. And then they have a breakthrough of their own. They discover that after finding the correct configuration, 6 groups of 164 PLCs, Stuxnet then searches for 3 strings of numbers. One of the strings is the serial number for a piece of hardware called a Profibus card, which transmits data between a PLC and the industrial machinery it controls. The other 2 numbers, however, remain a mystery, until an unexpected email provides a clue. It's November 2010. Omerku rushes into Chen's cubicle. His eyes are bright and his cheeks are flushed. Chen looks up at him and grins.
"You discovered something."
Omerku nods.
"You know how a month ago I posted on our blog asking for any experts in Profibus cards to contact us? Well, someone finally did. He says that every machine that's connected to a PLC is given an ID number by the Profibus card."
Chen's eyes go wide.
"The other 2 numbers Stuxnet looks for must be those ID numbers."
Omerku nods.
"So what's the equipment those numbers align with?" "Well, a Google search turned up 1. It's a frequency converter made in Finland." "Frequency converter. Those are used to control electrical currents to things like, you know, motors and rotors to control their speed." "Yeah, that's right. And I couldn't find the other number anywhere, so finally I just emailed Profibus. And can you believe it? They actually wrote me back. It's another frequency converter. And you'll never guess where it's made."
"Where?"
"Iran."
Chen jumps up from his chair.
"Okay, so what do we think these frequency converters are controlling the speed of?" "Come on. We know what the target is. We've been dancing around it ever since we discovered that the majority of infected computers were in Iran." "But it's crazy. It's the only thing that makes sense. Think about all the money and resources that went into this. There's only one target in Iran that's worth all that."
"Their nuclear facilities." Omerku nods. He doesn't know much about Iran's nuclear program, but like everyone else, he's read recent headlines about it. Just a few months ago, the Middle Eastern nation turned away UN inspectors, raising concerns that Iran is enriching uranium, not just for power plants, but to make weapons.
So what machinery in a nuclear facility has a rotor?
A rotor that would cause big problems if it operated at the wrong speed.
Centrifuges.
Nuclear centrifuges are used to enrich uranium. The number of centrifuges Iran operates has also been much in the news. Omarku nods.
You sabotage Iran's centrifuges. You sabotage their entire nuclear program.
We need to make sure.
Omarku agrees. They can't find the manuals online for either the Finnish or the Iranian frequency converters. So they download the manuals to as many others as they can find. In Paris, Valliere compares the commands in the manuals with the commands they see in the code. Within a day, they finally know what Stuxnet is doing. They decide to test it out to make sure they're right. It's November 2010. Liam Omarku has set up an experiment on one of the tables in the threat analysis lab. He's procured the model of PLC as well as the model of the frequency converter that Stuxnet searches for. But instead of connecting them to a nuclear centrifuge, Omarku has connected them to a simple air pump. At the end of the air pump, he attaches a bright yellow balloon.
Okay, I think we're ready.
Chen comes over and checks out what Omarku has set up. Omarku enters a few commands into a keyboard connected to the PLC.
Okay, first I'm just going to run the program straight, without Stuxnet installed, to show how it's supposed to work. I've programmed the air pump to run for 5 seconds. You ready?
Yep. Omarku hits enter. The computer whirs, and the air pump hisses. The balloon slowly but steadily inflates. Omarku keeps one eye on his watch and one eye on the balloon. After 5 seconds exactly, the air pump stops. The balloon is fully inflated. Chen bops at the balloon, feeling its fullness.
Beautiful. Okay, now I'm going to install Stuxnet. I'm not going to change anything else.
Omarku sends more commands to the PLC, while Chen attaches another balloon.
I'm ready. Is the balloon in position?
Yep,
all set. Here we go.
He hits enter and sits back. The computer whirs, the air pump hisses, but this time, it doesn't stop at the 5 second mark. The balloon grows bigger and bigger. Omarku points to the monitor.
Look, the computer says everything's operating as normal.
The balloon bursts with a loud pop. Omarku and Chen stare at the torn balloon for a moment. The air pump finally stops running. Omarku looks over at Chen.
I think we know what Stuxnet is doing to Iran's nuclear centrifuges.
Yeah, it's destroying them. And the Iranians have no clue why it's happening. Omarku and Chen have solved the mystery of what Stuxnet does and who it targets. But many more questions remain. Who launched the attack? How will Iran respond once news of the virus becomes public? What other mayhem could be unleashed by this new form of warfare? And they won't be alone in their search for answers. Soon, one dogged reporter at the New York Times is going to start looking into the origins of Stuxnet. And he'll be shocked by what he finds.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to American Innovations ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is episode 1 of The Mystery of Stuxnet on American Innovations. A quick note about the recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about the Stuxnet virus, check out Countdown to Zero Day by Kim Zetter. American Innovations is hosted by me, Stephen Johnson. For more information on my books about science and innovation, including my latest, Extra Life, A Short History of Living Longer, which is also a television series on PBS, you can visit my website at stephenberlinjohnson.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Stephen B. Johnson. This episode was written by Austin Rackless, with editing by Matt Almos. Audio post-production and sound design by Woodlands Audio, produced by Emily Frost. Our senior producer is Andy Herman. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
once upon a beat.
Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.